Oh, do you have been running first?
Yeah.
How's that sounding?
Welcome to Interlochen Public Radio's Studio A, featuring intimate performances and conversations in IPR's renowned production studio with some of the world's finest musical artists. Join us next for a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the lives of these extraordinary performers.
You're listening to Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Aaron Selbig. Bela Fleck is widely considered the best banjo player in the world. He's known for taking the instrument in new and unexpected musical directions. Chris Thiele is a virtuoso on the mandolin. He's made a name for himself with his bands Nickel Creek and the Punch Brothers. And later this fall, he'll take over as the new host of Prairie Home Companion. The two artists have joined forces for a week-long U.S. tour, and we're very pleased to have both of them here in the studio with us today. Mr. Fleck, Mr. Thiele, welcome to Interlochen, and thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
good to be here. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I must say, this is a lot of talent and star power in one room together. How did this idea for a duo tour come together?
It came together in my mind when I was 14 years old. but that was a long time ago.
And how old are you now, 16?
I don't know what the actual percentages, the likeliness of that happening.
Did you really, when you were a kid, dream of playing with Bela Fleck?
Absolutely. Doing duets. I learned all the Flecktones tunes and was just ready. I think in my mind there was some possibility of Bela just calling and going, "Hey, one of the guys is sick, can you join?" You know, and I would come roaring out there triumphantly knowing all the tunes. That was in my head, of course.
How did it turn out in real life?
Well, the first time was Merlefest. How old are you, 14?
Yeah, 14 or 15.
Yeah.
I think I was 15 for that thing, that jam.
Yeah. Did we meet before that? I don't think so. That was the first time you crossed my awareness, and it was like, wow, it's pretty amazing bluegrass player, because that's all we played on that jam when you came out and played a couple of tunes with us. Mm-hmm. And then he just kept coming on. Yeah, and the more and more facets got shown. Till it was like, wow, this is like the cat that's bringing the music forward now. So it's exciting to get to play with him.
And I saw a review that said, the show felt like peeking into a living room where two old friends are playing together. Is that what it feels like for you guys when you're on stage?
It's remarkably comfortable. That's been the thing from the first time we ever sat down together and played, is we could just go. We start playing and didn't have to say anything, and we could play for an hour and go into the ether, and so, you know, and part of it is he's so familiar with my language, and then he's building on it, so it inspires me, because I'm like, oh, I didn't know you could do that with this, with my stuff, and so then I go, oh, well, then maybe if he can do that, then maybe I can do this, and it's all happening in your synapses so fast that it's unconscious, pretty much, and those kinds of sparks don't happen with everybody. They're very rare, so.
It's wonderful to share musical dialect. You can, you know, if someone speaks exactly the same language that you do, you can start saying things that you didn't know you thought, in a way that I think, you know, the kind of conversation you can have with someone where there's a little bit of a language barrier. Maybe you can both, for me, only speaking English, for instance, the kind of conversation, the depth of conversation I can have with someone who speaks a little English, is different from someone who speaks perfect English. And I think with Bela, it's like we don't only just speak English together. It's like we speak the same dialect.
I wonder, as long as you've got your banjo out and your mandolin, maybe you'd play.
Sure. Should we do Up and Running first?
Thank you.
Wonderful.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris, how were you originally attracted to bluegrass music and the mandolin?
It was around. My parents started taking. They were voracious public radio listeners. So kind of everything that was on public radio at the time was in me. I mean, I liken this stuff to you know the early lesson everyone learns about flamingos, you know, and how they're pink because they eat a ton of shrimp, and the pigment in the dye, you know, it actually colors them. And I feel that musicians are that way, that what you listen to, it comes out, it's in there, it's part of what you have to draw from. So I think that early experience of, you know, just the day's programming on public radio, and then my parents' record collection, which was a lot of folk.
Where was that? Was that in Kentucky?
That was in Southern California.
And there was a lot of bluegrass and acoustic San Diego, music on and around there.
San Diego County had a thriving acoustic scene, but of course it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the same as the scene you might find in, you know, Louisville, Kentucky.
How old were you when you started playing?
Five. Yeah, but I started begging for a mandolin when I was two. They were taking me to this pizza place, and there was live music there every week. The leader of the band played mandolin, and I wanted very badly to do what he did, but not necessarily because of the instrument, more because of the guy. The guy was, you know, he's this very charismatic, magnetic fellow, and I wanted to be like him, and he played the mandolin, so there, you know, there it was.
Bela, what about you? What made you pick up a banjo?
Well, there was nothing to do with that kind of music in my world. I grew up in New York City on 100th Street in West End, and my grandparents had lived in Queens, and I remember going to see them probably around that age, that four or five years old. I don't exactly know when it was, but this memory of they letting us watch TV, and the Beverly Hillbillies came on, and that sound of that banjo just
in the theme
blew
song.
Me away, and it turns out to be the greatest banjo player of them all, Earl Scruggs, who has the ability to turn an unactivated banjo player into a foaming at the mouth person looking for a banjo and changing their lives. And every serious banjo player that I know of, or most of them, that I have had their aha Earl Scruggs moment, and it's always Earl. It's never another banjo player who makes them go into a type A, you know, personality change. But that's what happened to me. And ever since I heard that, my radar was out for banjo. But it's an instrument that you listen to it and you go, well, nobody can ever play that instrument. It's impossible. So it's so incredible. No, you know, I never thought I could ever play it, basically. So I never went and got one. But my mom got me a guitar, and I played a few Beatles songs and some folk songs. And I was a kid that was sort of interested in the guitar, interested in music, you know. But then when I was 15, I was just getting ready to go to high school. The weekend before high school started, and I went to see my grandfather, who had moved to Peekskill, New York, and he said, "Hey, I found this at a garage sale, and it was a banjo," and I was like, I couldn't believe it. It had just fallen into my lap out of the sky, and that was what I'd always wanted in the first place. So I just kind of freaked out. And then on the train home from Peekskill to New York, I ran into a guy who tuned it up for me, who played the banjo, and so I ended up back in the city, you know, the night before high school started, with this banjo that was in tune. And I just, all I could do
That's
is play
so
it.
Awesome.
All I could do is play it.
Did you ever learn to play the Beverly Hillbillies
theme song? Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe we could hear a little bit of it.
If you're ready, something
wonderful.
Like that. Earl does it better.
Thank you. You guys have both talked about having young children at home. I want to put this to both of you. Chris, I'll start with you. Has becoming a father affected your music?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot. All the stakes are higher. I guess music for me is, I've always just been sort of like in this fantasy world with it, where I'm... there's something theoretical about the whole pursuit somehow that I mean, I love it. I love every second. And I think since Calvin came along, it's almost like now I feel like I'm playing for keeps somehow. Like now it's almost like applying this to actual life. And this is what I've got. It's all I've done. This is what I can do. And so now that's what I am doing for him. And now think of it as like, he's inherited this world from us and we've messed it up pretty good. And so now I feel like I need to do something to make it better for him.
Mm-hmm. Has having a child changed your music, Ben?
I don't play as much. You know, there's times where, well, here's the thing. Like Chris, the music is everything to me. And like Chris, the notes are it. I'm not trying, if there's any kind of social impact of it, it's not because I'm trying to create a social impact. It's because it's a natural outgrowth of what I'm doing, and it makes people feel a certain way or feel inspired or whatever it is that they walk away with. And I'm thrilled that anybody ever says, hey, that music helped me through a tough time, yeah. Or hey, we took your music to the Arctic, or you know, or whatever, and it got us through whatever. Whenever I hear anything where the music that I created because it made me feel whole made somebody else's life better, I go, thank goodness it's not just about me. I still feel like it's really important that I don't let up on my focus of being the musician I want to be just because I'm a parent, because I don't want to show Juno that it's okay to not follow your dreams or to be less than you can be. I want him to look at me and go, oh, you know, Papa was always really trying hard to be the best he could be, and I think that I want to be the best I can be.
I think it's so tempting to vilify humanity wholesale right now, that we treat each other poorly, we treat our environment poorly. It's kind of a dark time. Like what we fear each other, and I think that that art is a way to remind ourselves of the beauty that humanity is capable of producing. And actually is inclined to produce. And so I think I haven't thought much about that just because it made me, because it scared me. And then Calvin came along and I feel like now I actually have an obligation to think about it, because I got to try and make sure that the world that I give him gives him the best chance at happiness possible.
Gentlemen, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Studio A. Today's program was engineered by Michael Culler. Meg Gruitz was our producer. This is Interlochen Public Radio.